Expanded Perspectives, Classic Rewind. Hey everybody, and welcome to Expanded Perspectives, Classic Rewind, the show where we replay or re-air some of our favorite segments and interviews we did in the past because some things deserve a listen to more than once. I'm your host, Kyle Filson, and on today's show, we're going all the way back to November 11th, 2013, when Cam and I talked about the rock apes of Vietnam, as well as four out-of-place objects. Now, you might be asking yourself, Kyle, what in the heck are you talking about? Rock apes of Vietnam? Now, almost everyone knows what Bigfoot is, or Sasquatch, but not nearly as many people know about the Batutut, or rock ape. Now, sightings of these mysterious creatures by American troops in the jungles of Vietnam throughout the course of the Vietnam War were surprisingly numerous, with many witnesses giving extremely detailed accounts of these sightings. Now, one particular hill in Vietnam was the site of so many rock ape sightings that it became known as Monkey Mountain. While no corpses of these strange creatures were ever recovered or any clear pictures taken of them, the fact that sightings of them were so widespread and common throughout the war makes them worthy at least of a conversation. After that, we talk about some out-of-place objects like the Koso artifact, the aluminum wedge of Ayud, and the anti-Katera device, and of course, a Texas favorite, the London Hammer. So without further jaw-jacking, let's get to it. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives, Classic Rewind.
And I don't watch the rest because they never find nothing.
You are no help whatsoever when it comes to the audio. Like,
what the hell?
The kids really like it, though. They love it. Jack Link's jerky. That's how the boys told me I could catch a Bigfoot when I was talking to the
horse. You give him beef jerky.
Well, he's only mean to you if you try to take it away.
Right, and pull a prank on him. Right. Yeah. If you just share it with him, he's cool, man.
He's down with that. He's cool, yo. Okay, what I'm going to discuss for this Veterans Day, which made me think of it, was the Vietnam rock ape, which... there's been a lot, and when I say a lot, there has been several accounts given by Vietnam veterans that had seen things or encountered things while in Vietnam.
Now, weren't a lot of these veterans, though, just stoned to the gills on LSD and weed and stuff?
Man, I've watched a lot of those same movies you've watched, and it looks like that, but you know what? I wouldn't be hating on them if they were.
No.
I bet they had some.
What about was Agent Orange, like, makes you start having hallucinations?
I don't know, but when I read you this story right here, it's a pretty wild story, really.
So does it have a cool name other than just the rock
game? Well, okay, they actually call it, in Vietnam, it's called the Batutut.
The Batutut.
Batutut, which actually stands for forest people.
Oh, okay.
That's kind of in Vietnamese, and of course, I'm sure my Vietnamese accent's a little off. You could have actually called it Batutut.
I don't have any idea.
I don't know, but I'm going off of that whole thing. There was actually a book that's got several of these articles written in it, and it's called Very Crazy G.I., Strange But True Stories of the Vietnam War, and it's written by Craig P.J. Jorgensen, and he was a Vietnam veteran, and he's put a lot of these in here.
And you can get this on Amazon?
Yes, you can find it on Amazon. He actually tells a story that he actually had a sighting in Vietnam of a short, red-haired, hairy, upright anthropoid that were running around out there. He called it, and the soldiers in the Vietnam soldiers in that area called it rock apes. I'm assuming it's because they saw them a lot in the Rocky Craigs and the mountains of the area.
I mean, I'm not familiar with the wildlife range of what am I thinking of?
The Vietnam, yeah.
No,
creatures, come on.
It's a type of ape with red hair. I can't think of the
orangutan.
Yeah, could it have been one of those? I mean, or do they not live there?
How long have you known me?
Long time.
Have I ever studied primates or orangutans that live in Vietnam?
No, but I'm just saying, orangutans are known to be in that area, and then some guy sees one, some red hair. I mean, I would think it was that.
That was the first thing that I thought of whenever you bring that up, and I've actually got it jotted down in my notes.
Not,
yeah.
And I'm not picking on your story. I'm saying I think most sightings of everything is just misidentification.
Well, you bring that up because I looked up trying to figure out the sizes of what they actually said that rock apes were. Some of them were small. They actually saw like 3-footers. The story I'm about
obviously juveniles.
The story I'm about to read you is about a 7-footer.
Whoa.
Yeah. I don't know of anything that's 7 foot tall in Vietnam. I mean, certainly not the people. So, I mean, what, you know what I'm saying? What the heck is that big in Vietnam?
Yeah.
Not that I'm a specialist in the Vietnam critters, but
yeah,
I don't know. But what made me, and I'll get into that after I, you know, we'll read and discuss this story, but what made me think of it was when I first started thinking of the rock apes, I instantly thought about the Sumatran orang pendek.
Right.
Because they talk about their small, red-haired, you know, and they, you know, alleged to look maybe a lot like an orangutan or something like that. So, if you want to find this story, folks, if you want to jump on and go along sometimes, if you go to beforeitsnews.com is where we got it from. It actually comes from a website before. It's called stancourtney.com, so I'm sure Stan's the man that wrote it. This was originally published. This actual excerpt from this whole thing on the Fortune News was originally published on venomousandmonsters.com, which is Lon's website. But see if I can do my best to read y'all something to make it entertaining. Here we go. It was in 1969. I was on patrol one evening, just before dark in the North 2 Corps in Vietnam. We were returning to the hill when we encountered hostile fire. The squad was caught off guard, so we used what cover was available. The fight had been going on for only a few minutes when movement caught my eye. Through the thick vegetation, I saw what I thought was a large man breaking cover from behind my left side. As the thing ran past me, I realized it wasn't a man, and I was not really sure of what I was seeing. The thing was about 7 feet tall and had an enormous build. Though not completely covered with hair, the thing had reddish-brown hair covering a good portion of its body. It had covered about 30 yards very quickly, passing within just yards of my position, when it got hit in the crossfire. The thing stumbled once or twice, but never fell. All of a sudden, the enemy broke and ran. One even left his weapon behind. They were yelling something, but none of us ever knew what it was that they were yelling. We slowly regrouped and made sure no one was wounded and discussed what we thought we had seen. As it was getting dark and there were hostiles in the area, we decided to get back to the hill. That night, we heard several howls sounding very similar to the ones that you have recorded coming from all over the place. Some sounds like there were just outside of the hooch, and others sounded more than a mile away. There were all kinds of sounds from whines to growls to sounds that sounded like barks. Needless to say, no one slept that night. The next morning, all of us that were on the patrol decided to try and track this thing. It took a lot of talking to get the tops to let us go looking for it, but after hearing the same story from the whole squad, they decided to let us have a chance to bring it back. We returned to the area and found a blood trail leading into the jungle. We trailed it for quite some time. Then we found the body of an enemy soldier that had been almost torn completely apart. We did not know exactly what happened, but I have a good notion to what may have happened. We basically ran out of that area back to our hill. The rest of the time we were in Vietnam, I never heard the sounds or saw anything like it again. The talk of what we had seen spread very quickly, and some of the locals called it a name that I can neither pronounce or remember. But the translation, if I recall, was stench monkey or foul monkey.
Back toot toot.
Back toot toot. I can't remember for sure. What I do know is that it bothered me so much that I transferred from there to a job on a helicopter so I wouldn't have to be in the jungle anymore. After returning home to Alabama when my tour had ended, I occasionally heard sounds that reminded me so much of that encounter. It had been years since I had left Alabama and moved to the west central Illinois. I seldom thought of that day in Vietnam or the things I heard and saw. The recording is exactly what I heard over there. I could close my eyes and still hear the howl in Vietnam. Regrettably, I have mixed feelings about discovering your website. Relieved that someone else may know what I went through, frightened that there may be something in the area where I now live. I realize that you are interested in pursuing this creature or one like it, but let me warn you from someone who has seen it, what it is capable of firsthand, don't. And that comes from StanCourtney.com. What it is, it's talking about some of the sounds that you had played for us and some of the howls and stuff.
Whooping and stuff?
Yeah. So apparently this guy actually saw something large.
Yeah.
And this is going against the other things that we had discussed.
And it dismembered somebody.
It jacked up somebody while it was kicking it around over there, yeah.
And it was shot?
He says it took a couple of hits.
Is that the blood trail they were following?
It was trailing it, yeah. They just... Man, goes back into that thing like we discussed with Linda whenever she was talking about the werewolves.
Yeah.
It seems like you hit them, but it never kills.
That's not the first time I've heard somebody
wear it,
something like that, and they just keep on rocking.
There's another one on here I'm going to read you right quick.
Okay.
A man named Steve Williams sent this in, and it says, "While at an Army military police school, my brother-in-law, Craig Miles, of Boise, Idaho, met a Vietnam veteran that recalled a low-altitude special forces drop into the interior during 1967 and 68. It was the middle of the night, and there was no villages for 15 miles. Says, for a period of 3 nights, they heard choking and gurgling noises. On the first day, they found the upper half of a decomposing Bigfoot-like creature. It had been blown in half by something, but not them. This was apparently not the noise they had heard, a mate, possibly. This was the speculation that was circulating. They could see into the body cavity, spine, lungs, and such. All was crawling with bugs. There was shorter hair on the head. The eyes sunk back an inch and a half from the brow line. It had long arms, very large and long fingers, and one hand was still wrapped around a branch. He didn't say what color it was, but he did mention that it had a flat nose. If the creature had its legs, the estimated height was around 8 feet tall.
Holy cow.
There was no sign of the lower half of the body. They were able to see the teeth, all flat, well-formed molars, except the canines, which were longer and pointed. Seemed adapted to living in the forest with long arms and fingers, or perhaps just builds night nests like gorillas sometimes do." I don't even know what to think about that.
Wow.
These are guys that have come back, and even guys that are telling these stories of what they have seen. I mean, at this point here, I understand, you know, this didn't happen in the States. It's not like you could have easily grabbed what was the remains and took it back in to be checked. I get that. But still.
So I guess there was like a firefight or something, and like
mortar round,
and maybe there was a landmine.
Maybe there was a landmine somewhere that blew the legs off of it. I don't know what happened, but it sounds like they got a really good look.
Yeah.
At what it was. These are stories like this man here. I wish that somebody would follow up, would really go discuss it, you know, would really go talk to the people that, I mean, yeah, this is a good story.
The people that write into this.
Well, yeah, the guy that was telling that story, that would be a really great story to listen to, or to actually talk to him and be like, can you describe it well enough for like a police sketch artist to sketch something up to what you saw? Or has it been so long now that maybe your mind's kind of playing?
And I'm with you. That would be very interesting if you could find a book or a compilation of all these stories. Like I said, I've heard I heard some stories that happened during Vietnam, but I want to say like they saw guys that were like glowing.
You told me a story, this has been a while back, about a guy seeing what that actually looked like it had wings. Like when it took off, remember? Like,
well, right.
And took off and it looked like it had wings. I mean, that's nothing like what we're discussing.
No, I know. This was not Sasquatch. I'm talking about just other stories during Vietnam. I even heard a story of like a pterosaur or something flying around. You know, it reminded me of Palm Nation because that's Papua New Guinea?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, that's what it reminds me of. I don't know if it had bioluminescence or not, but I remember reading somewhere about these things that they saw flying. It was completely silent. You could just hear them when it flew over, and they looked like large pterosaurs. And then also I said, I read something about some glowing men they saw. Like it was like a Sasquatch almost, but like it was glowing, like orange. I don't know. I'd have to.
Yeah, that is true. Well, and it there was that one story that you and I had both read about the Japanese soldiers in New Guinea were clearing out the caves and had flushed a bunch of pterosaurs out.
Yeah.
You know, that's a pretty crazy
story. Now, was that on an island out in the Pacific, or was that?
I thought it was in Papua New Guinea where it actually happened.
Oh, it was Papua New Guinea.
I don't know. We're going to have to talk to Paul about that for sure. When I got carried off onto the whole rock ape thing is when I got to looking up the Orang Pendak. And that's, for people that aren't familiar with the Orang Pendak, actually is from the island of Sumatra. Now, some of the very first rock ape stories we're talking, like I told you that when I first was researching them, and you had talked about what you'd seen, were like 3-footers. And that's what made me first think of it. Then I found this, where they were talking about large creatures, you know, very, very large creatures. So I was like, okay, maybe it's not the same thing that we've been looking into. But the Orang Pendak sizes are roughly 30 to 60 inches. I'm sorry, centimeters tall. Excuse me. So they said they usually, this is what they say that they usually get to. 85 to 90 centimeters. Now, this is coming from Debbie Martyr. She's been studying their ring pinback for 15 years. And she says by her studies, they are usually 80 to 90 centimeters tall, sometimes a meter and 20 centimeters tall.
Hmm.
So they're not real big. What are we talking about? So we're talking 3 to 3.5 footers.
Right.
And now here's the really strange thing, though. And some of these, Debbie reports that they are dark gray or they're black with, like, speckled and flecked parts of gray hair in them. But that's just one. Some of the other reports that I found, they were like a reddish brown, blackish brown, golden browns. I mean, gray to brown. I mean, it pretty much seems like from a gray to a black, they cover this range of browns and reds and golden colors. So it does sound a lot like an orangutan.
Yeah.
In the size and in the color.
I mean, the size, it's a, exactly.
Long-armed, long fingers.
Yeah, I mean.
Folks, I'm not saying it's an orangutan, but it does fit that description. So it makes me wonder, it's almost like it leads even more credence to me believing that maybe the orang pindak, I can buy into something 100% that's maybe a three-footer, three-and-a-half-footer that's hiding around up there in the mountains.
Yeah, I mean, who's to say that the orang pindak is just an undiscovered, very rare ape that's living in that area? It's different than the orangutan.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Because they discover new monkeys all the time. What was it, the one that they discovered just a couple of years ago, the Bondo ape?
Mm-hmm. That is a creepy,
and that's in Africa. Yeah. I think they'd had pictures of it for a long
time. Only from the 90s did they ever get photos. They've been told about it for quite some time.
Right. So, I mean, now they know it's real, and they've actually got a specimen. Mm-hmm. I think they found a dead one, or they shot one. Heck, I don't know.
Yeah, I think they've got
you know what I'm saying? I mean, Sumatra's not very populated, so maybe this is just another ape that's living there. That's not a new Bigfoot or anything.
I had actually heard, and I can't think of where I actually heard it from, but that they were saying that they believed that they were very close to proving that the orang pindak was real.
Yeah, it's probably real. In fact, I think they discovered a new monkey or something in Vietnam.
Yeah, they discovered three new creatures in Vietnam, I believe.
But say one was some kind of primate,
maybe
a monkey or something.
Well, and what's funny is some of these stories, like I told you about the very crazy GI story, he actually talks about seeing some of them in the trees. These smaller ones in the trees. One was a black one that it stayed behind to kind of defend its group as its group left. And them telling it story. Now, of course, I wasn't there. You know, I don't know what it, you know, but if you listen to the story, it sounds like a troop of primates that was fleeing an area under duress, and one stayed behind to try to slow them down or fight or whatever it was. The orang pindak has been seen a few times in trees in Sumatra. They're not known to live in trees, but they have been seen there.
Hmm.
So it kind of leads more to, for me, wanting to lean more towards, yeah, I can understand why people could get behind that. I'm not saying that Bigfoot's not real, because after talking to Gary and Mike, both on air and off air, folks, they really tied a lot more down for me to really think.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, just like we said before, I mean, I'm sure most cases are misidentifications, but there's always that small percentage that you just can't explain.
Yeah.
To me, there's just too many unexplained events for there not to be more to the story. And then, you know, you look at almost all the ancient cultures where these things are seen, it goes back forever that they've seen these things. You know, this is the Ulm, this is the Sasquatch. And so why would all these cultures be making up this story? So,
and Amy, you did a really good story on Zana on this last, on the,
oh, really?
Last, yeah, this past Thursday, they did a good story.
Man, we almost did it, too.
I know.
About a month ago.
Yeah,
in fact, I even put a blog up like a month ago on her. We were going to record, and we never did. I know why we didn't. I remember right before we were about to record, I think America or something released a story on it. And we were like, man, it's a good thing we didn't record that.
Is that what it was?
I think so.
I don't remember.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't.
The Coral Castle.
It was the Coral Castle. We were going to do some work.
The Coral Castle, I had.
Edward Lee Scoundrel.
I had a bunch of stuff written down and all linked to the Coral Castle. And when they did it, we didn't do it.
Yeah. There's a lot of recordings we do that we just never released.
Yeah.
We almost did one on Zana.
But Zana was another one that, and they did, and it was only, I'm trying to think off on the spot, but something about the DNA, that they studied her DNA just recently.
Well, yeah, I mean, for people that don't know, Zana is apparently an Ulmus. An Ulmus is a type of European Sasquatch that lives, like, in southern Russia, what is now Georgia and stuff. And I don't know what year this took place. I think it was in the 1800s. But
the end of the 1800s. I don't want to say 1870.
They captured this Almas.
Maybe before that. I think she died in the 1890s. Okay. Actually, she died.
They captured her. And she was a female Almas. And they habituated it. And they tamed her. And they had her doing chores for them.
And they also had her for a sex slave.
Sex slave. Several of the men actually had children with her.
Mm.
And some of them survived. I mean,
I think three.
I don't remember the guys, but yeah, I remember. I know for a fact she had like two sons, and they said that, you know, they had really big jaws and they weren't the best looking.
Well, you'll have to listen to it because I'm going blank right now. But it's one of those things where they checked it and that she didn't have any more. They didn't have any more Neanderthal DNA than what you would think, like than me or you. So it wasn't like they were maybe a Neanderthal throwback or something like that, but they did have some other DNA in them that they couldn't quite put their finger on. So maybe she's closer to primates.
Well, what are you saying that they were able to exhume her body and test the DNA?
They tested the DNA of her sons.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't heard that one yet.
What is it called? The Dyatlov Pass? Remember the story about the UFOs in Russia? The one UFO where all those hackers went missing and then they found
them. Like aged.
Yeah. You need to listen to the latest MU. I know now I'm doing an MU commercial, but you need to listen to it. Because as much as you like that story, uh-huh. They do a whole thing. There's a man that actually just finished writing a book on the whole thing. And he actually went to Russia three different times, stayed over there, studied it, interviewed the one hiker that got sick and came back. And his people went ahead and went on. He interviewed him just months before he died.
Really?
The whole thing's, we've got to get the book. The book is going to be awesome.
That's awesome.
Hey, let me tell you this right quick.
Okay.
While we're still on this whole crypto thing, let me get to this. There are, I found a few more crypto things. I was looking for some that might be, we've all seen the pictures on the internet, like the giant camel spiders and stuff when they were over in Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, and they look like they're as big around as a tire and things like that. So I just started searching up crypto stuff in the areas that we've been occupying for, you know, thinking of veterans. I wanted to think of something up like that. I only found two really interesting ones. One's from India. Nothing really going on over there. And it's called the Buru. And it actually says there's an alarm.
It's called the what?
The Buru. B-U-R-U.
Nibiru?
Not Nibiru.
That's the Buru planet.
Yeah. The Burrow. That's Eddie Bravo's monster. It said it was a large or giant. I don't know if those were two separate things, but.
Catfish.
Aquatic reptile that's said to live in the Zero Valley in India.
It's a catfish. Come on.
No, they say it looks like a giant monitor lizard.
Really?
Yeah, that's what they're claiming.
How big?
That they didn't. There's not a lot of information on some of these things. It's almost just kind of like it was a tail and somebody took it down and kind of did a little study on it and stuff like that.
Okay.
The other cool one, though, was from Pakistan. And it's Pakistan's version of the Bigfoot. Basically, it lives in the mountain.
Pakistan has a Bigfoot?
Yes, it lives in the mountain region area of Pakistan.
Wow.
And it's called the Barmanru or the Badmanis. I'm serious. I'm the Badmanis. Yeah. Yes, that's speaking of cool names. It's like Baddmanus. Bad M Anus.
Wow.
But what's funny is
it's like a lowland abominable snowman. Because, I mean, Pakistan runs right into
the Himalayas.
Yeah.
That's what they're saying is it falls between the Almas of the Central Asian mountain range.
Gotcha.
And the Himalayas. The Barmanu or the Badmanis.
Man, I got to learn these and add these to my repertoire.
Exactly.
And the Batutut. I mean, that's two new.
But here's a really cool thing, and I want to get this paper. Of course, you're going to have to freshen up on your French. There's a Spanish zoologist. His name's Jordi Magraner, and he lives in France. And he did the very first known research from 1987 to 1990 on this Badmanis.
Wow.
And he actually wrote a paper. Now, I would love to give you the name of that paper, but my French is less than pathetic, so it's probably not something that I could be shouting off and chiming in about, but it's something that I wish there was I'd like to read about it. I'd like to know what he's found there, because just like what you brought up, it's actually resting in between the Himalayas and Central Asia. Maybe there is something going on there, man.
Well, Lloyd Pye is a big proponent for there being different bipedal, whatever they are,
mm-hmm.
cryptids, that change their appearance and size and stuff based on...
At will.
What? Yeah. I don't know. Based on where they live. In other words, like you were saying earlier, the Sumatran is the Orang Pandek, or if you go to the Himalayas, it's the Abominable Snowman. If you go to the Pacific Northwest, it's Sasquatch. If you go to Florida, it's the Skunk Ape. You know what I mean? Like, yes. They change based on, like, their territory, which makes sense because... You know, that happens with animals that we know of. I mean, like white-tailed deer in South Texas are completely different than white-tailed deer in Alberta.
True, true. So I guess that's what I was getting at, is when it gets colder, they need to be bigger, correct? And when it's hotter,
so it seems like
then they need to be smaller. Isn't that what it is? I don't remember how that works.
I know that animals that live on islands usually end up being larger for some reason.
Yeah, and that goes back to, like, the hobbits of Florence.
But they're smaller.
They're a little bitty, yeah. And so there seems like mammals get smaller and reptiles get larger.
Yeah.
And they always, like, well, I think on that same thing, they found, like, elephants that are, like, 3 foot tall.
That's awesome.
Bunch of tiny elephantes. Yeah. So, anyway, I hope you enjoyed it. That was something it came to mind whenever I was looking through all this stuff this week. I thought I'd like to
read a couple of stories. It's a good call, the Veterans Day things.
I'd like to read a couple of stories about it, because it's just, I'm still fascinated by the whole thing that there are so many sightings, just like, and that's kind of what I want to wrap this little segment up with right quick, guys. I know I've been rambling and going wild with it, but here's the thing. You've got sightings in Vietnam. We've got a man that studied this now in Pakistan. We've got it in Sumatra. We know it's in Asia. We know it's in the Himalayas. When are they ever going to finally take it serious and somebody really devote a little more study to it? We like to joke about finding Bigfoot. Everybody likes to give each other a hard time about Bigfoot, but seriously, there are so many cases now from around the world that it really needs some serious study. It really should be something that...
Well, I think most academics are scared to touch the subject because they're afraid of being ridiculed and laughed at. And so that's, you know, it's becoming more mainstream. So eventually I think the tides are going to change.
I certainly hope so, because there's so many cases and so many, I mean, I would like to say reliable. I can't, because I don't know of all the cases around the world, but there's a lot of people that have really given some good stories about it. So I really hope that it starts making a change now, and I hope that people look at it a little bit differently instead of just laughing and you know, and taking it as a joke. There's a lot of more information about these creatures all around, really.
Yeah.
Well, I hope y'all enjoy it. I mean, I hope I wouldn't bore anybody to
death. I think it's neat.
All right. Well, I'm going to have to go get me a drink. I'm a little thirsty now.
Me too.
All right, let's wrap it up, and we will be back shortly. Wait, hold on now. Wait a second. What are you coming back with? You're not getting out of here that easy. What are you doing?
My top four artifacts that are missing through time. You know, they show up in places where they shouldn't be.
And so this is going to actually show
like a Casio keyboard that was found in, you know, 2 BC.
Nice. What is that keyboard? Looks like a guitar. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know, but that is the coolest instrument I'm here. I'm so exist in a place where it's impossible for it to exist. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
And out of place,
I love it.
They'll be like,
now, before, Before I get started, I'm going to put a disclaimer here. Okay, now look, people. I am not a geologist. I am not a professional scientist. I'm just bringing this. This is an entertainment show.
Are you a geologist?
No, I'm not. So some of these artifacts that I'm going to bring up, there's, of course, a lot of controversy around them. So there's going to be just as many people that are, you know, different websites that say it's fake, and there's other ones that say it's real. And so we don't really need to get into that. If it's not 100% real or you don't believe it, you know, don't bust my chops about it. I'm just bringing the information. I'm going to tear you up. Anyways, there's several of them, and you can look at them, and I'll put links to all of them in the show, and there's tons more. These are just my four favorite. The first one, now, I don't know if you know, but you probably know some of these. You may know all of them. I don't know. The first one, I don't know. I'm a pretty smart guy, Kyle. No, I don't know about that. Okay. The Koso artifact. You ever heard of this?
No, I have not heard of the Koso artifact. Koso sometimes artifact. I don't like whenever you just blindside me with stuff.
Not the Lee Corso artifact. The Koso artifact.
Okay, hit me with it.
Okay, on February 13th of 1961, Wallace Lane, Virginia Maxey, and Mike Mixel were out looking for geodes for their rock shop. They have a rock shop called, like, Rock Hounds, Gems, and Gift Shop. They have a gift shop there.
Okay.
And they often went out and did this. And, well, they were out searching about 6 miles north of Olancha, California.
Okay.
That's where they were doing these rock searches. And after, they normally sell geodes. You know what geodes are?
Yes, sir.
Everybody's seen them when you crack them in half or cut them in half, and it's got crystals and stuff all inside. And so they were out collecting these geodes, and they collected, you know, a couple fossils, a couple geodes, and they threw them in a sack, and they went home. No big deal. They do this all the time. Well, the next day, Mixel was cutting these geodes in half. And fairly into the process, he totally ruined a brand new diamond saw blade while cutting one of these geodes, or what he thought was a geode in half.
Okay.
So he was like, what the hell? Well, he looked at it, and instead of it being hollow, he found a perfectly circular section of very hard material that appeared to be porcelain. Okay? And in the center of the porcelain was like a 2-millimeter shaft of bright metal. And the metal responded to a magnet. They had a geologist come look at this thing, and they did some tests on it. And the geologist examined the artifact and said that the shells that were encrusting the outside of this geode or rock or whatever it was, it would have taken 500,000 years to attain its present form. Now, what they think was in this rock was a spark plug.
Wait a second.
You know, like a spark plug that you see all the time, the white porcelain part.
Did they finish cutting the rock open, or how did they know it was porcelain?
Well, right. Evidently, they ruined the first saw blade.
They stopped.
They knew something was wrong. It's not a geo, they don't know. And then I guess they finished it by cutting it in half, because there's pictures on the internet of it.
They had like x-rays of it or CAT scans.
Yeah, they x-rayed it, you know, and they've got pictures of it, and they've had it looked at, and yeah, I mean, it looks like a spark plug. But the problem is, just like all these other artifacts, the rock that's encrusting the thing, it would have taken 500,000
years.
Yeah. So, is it an alien spark plug? Was it a time traveler?
I don't know. I forgot an answer right there. It fell out of the DeLorean.
It's right.
It's where Marty McFly dropped it.
I'm going to put pictures of all this on the website. But, man, you know, that one is always my favorite. Because it doesn't make any sense.
It makes no sense. I don't even know
how is that possible?
I don't know. I guess that's the reason I asked if they had x-rayed it or really.
Yeah, they've x-rayed
it. Did they end up cutting the rest of the geode away so they could actually study what it was?
No, they didn't break it out of the rock. But it's sawed completely in half, and you can see both halves. And it looks like a donut-sized porcelain with a small metal rod through the middle,
surrounded in porcelain.
Right.
So it's a geode with a porcelain wrapped rod in the center of it.
Right.
And that's not naturally occurring.
When they x-ray it, you can see it. I mean, it looks like it even has like the threads of a bolt on one end and everything. I mean,
where the hell did that
come? Well, that's the part of the argument. A lot of people say, well, it's not that old. That stuff can, rocks can form in certain instances very quickly. It could be like 100 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the one geologist that they had looked at it said, there's no way. This stuff, I mean, there's fossilized shells and stuff on the outside that's encrusted. I don't know. Like I said, I'm not a geologist. That's a fascinating story.
That is a hell of a story. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Number two.
Was that number one? That's your favorite one?
No,
that's
my favorite one. Number four would probably be my favorite.
Okay, so we're actually, we started at number four. We're going to number one.
That's okay.
Okay, so you're on number three, basically. Now
okay.
We're counting up to the top one.
Okay,
so number three is the aluminum wedge of Ayud. Now here comes the school names again. Ayud.
Where did this come from?
Okay, in 1974 in Romania, 2 kilometers east of Ayud, a group of workers on the banks of the River Mureș discovered 3 buried objects in the sand.
Okay.
2 of the objects turned out to be mastodon bones.
Oh, kick ass.
Millions of years old, okay? The 3rd object was a block of metal, similar in some respects to the head of a hammer. It was roughly 8 inches long, about 5 inches wide, and 3 inches tall. Now, they took this metal object and they sent it off to have it studied, you know, at the Institute of Metals in Romania.
Mm-hmm.
And it's composed of an alloy of extremely complex metal. It's made up of 12 different elements. 89% of it, of the elements, 89% of it was aluminum. Aluminum is not found in nature. It's combined with other minerals
mm-hmm.
and materials, and we've only been able to do that in the last 100 years or so. So if this thing's laying next to mastodon bones from millions of years ago...
Now they claim it came from the same strata, correct?
Yeah, it's exactly the same strata. It was all found together. What the heck is this aluminum wedge doing here? Right?
Yeah.
So now, crazy ancient aliens again.
Yeah.
They say it's probably a landing gear or a piece of a landing gear from a spacecraft. But here again, what the hell is this thing doing next to millions of years old mastodon bones?
The first thing I think of is that if it was found on the banks of a river, it's something that washed and tumbled and washed into the same strata as the mastodon bones. Maybe they all washed together from another area. Years ago, and then it's just kind of piled up. It's hard to say. I mean, I understand how they're trying to tie to it. But if it's not, then what does that tell you? Well, it tells me that mankind is hundreds of thousands of years older.
Exactly.
The same as this spark plug, yeah.
Well, just like we've talked about privately and on previous podcasts, I mean, this could be another indicator that mankind was here before the last deluge, before the last flood, pre-flood, pre-ice age, had the technology to forge aluminum, and this was, you know, just a piece of something that had to be built, you know. We always assume that, you know, we're the smartest that mankind's ever reached, and maybe that's just not true. Maybe there was a whole bunch of us here a long time ago, and for whatever reason,
multiple rises and falls, maybe?
Yeah. So that's another great one, right?
Yeah, that's a cool one right there, really.
Right. Now, Ayud is A-I-U-D. So if you want to search it up, I'll put links to it. But it's called the Aluminum Wedge of Ayud.
That's pretty cool.
The next one, I know you've heard of this one because I know you're a Philip Coppens fan. And I know you've read some of his books. The Anti-Katerra device.
Yes, I do. I enjoy it. Yeah. They've actually done several studies on that for sure.
Right. Now, the Anti-Katerra device is a really neat one. I mean, it's... You know, like the world's first computer, they call it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, in 1900, a Greek sponge diver named Ilias Stadiatos, working off the small Greek island of Antikythera, found the remains of a sunken Greek ship at the bottom of the sea. The wreck was about 50 meters long and was located in about 43 meters of water. They found, tons of stuff in the wreckage. They found marble and bronze statues, gold and jewelry, and all kinds of other artifacts, you know. And they were all dated to about 1st century B.C. Well, all the items were donated to the Museum of Athens, and they were just left there, you know. Well, about 2 or 3 years later, while sorting through some of the material, a man named Valerio Stais noticed a calcified lump of bronze that looked like a big watch. No one knew what it was, you know, so he went, you know, what the heck is this? Nobody knew. Well, in 1958, this was years later, a Yale science historian, Derek De Sola Price, stumbled upon the object again, and he decided to make it a subject of a scientific study. Okay, so he was working on a book, and De Sola stated, "Nothing like this instrument is preserved elsewhere. Nothing comparable to it is known from any ancient scientific text or literary allusion. On the contrary, from all that we know of science and technology in the Hellenistic age, we should have felt that such a device could not have ever existed." I mean, he concluded that the object was both dials on the inside and the outside. It had a series of gears inside of it. This thing was like a
like the size of our mixing board, like the size of a medium-sized suitcase, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it was calcified, of course, and it had all kinds of gears and stuff. You know, there was at least 20 gear wheels that were preserved, including a sophisticated assembly of gears that were mounted eccentrically on a turntable. The device also contained a differential gear, permitting two shafts to rotate at different speeds. As to its purpose, the mechanism appeared to have been a device for calculating the motions of stars and planets, a working model of the solar system. So, I mean,
it sounds like when we were talking about earlier with the sailors, the ancient sailors being able to sail, that almost sounds like maybe not even that, but also like a timekeeping device also as well.
But, yeah, they don't, I mean, and this thing is very complicated, okay, and very precise. You know, I mean, it says here that the study also revealed some of the complexity of the engineering that had gone into this device. The moon sometimes moves slightly faster in the sky than at others because of the satellite's elliptical orbit. To overcome this, the designer would have had to use the calculation, use a pin and slot mechanism to connect the two gears and wheels and introduce the necessary variations. So the designer of this thing was very knowledgeable about the speed of the moon and all the other things. He knew that there was an elliptics. You know, that's the craziest thing. This is a high-tech device. You know?
Yeah.
It says here, finally, the discovery of the anti-Katerra device led to one gigantic realization, that our everyday clock started as an astronomical showpiece that happened to also indicate the time, and not vice versa, as most of us believed half a century ago. Gradually, the timekeeping functions of the clocks became more important, and the device that showed the cycles of heaven became subsidiary, only to be forgotten and then once reinvented all over again. So they're thinking that this thing, you know, of course it kept time, but it did so much more than that. I mean, it was able to map out the movement of the planets in the solar system, the cycles of the seasons. It was able to map out. I mean, and all this thing, I mean, this was all on a first century wreck, B.C.
Mm-hmm.
So how old is this device pre that?
Yeah, exactly. Where did it come from?
Right.
Or where did the technology to build it come from?
Exactly.
And that's almost like people would always, you try to speculate of how would you guide yourself on the ocean whenever there was an overcast sky, stormy skies, how would you know where you were going? Well, with this device here, maybe in some way it actually made it easier.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I mean, I don't know the answer to that question. I mean, what do you do when it's like that? You just wait till the sun comes out?
I saw there was a guy that actually rebuilt it. He actually built one of them.
Well, they have a couple reproductions. I think they said that there's one in England, and I think that they said that there's one in Wyoming or somewhere.
The heck's it doing in Wyoming?
Well, they're doing the reproductions.
Yeah, what the heck's it doing up there? There's not any water on that thing. Somebody just sitting in the backyard watching the stars and the sun go by?
Well, I mean, I don't know. But I'm just telling you what it is.
Can we get a copy of it? Where's that 3D printer?
I want
one of those.
That's how they know about the inner workings of it is
through the 3D printer.
X-ray technology, because, you know, it's so calcified and rusted. They can't open
for
it.
For real.
Okay.
Hit me with number one, baby.
My favorite one, and this is probably just because it's local, but I know you know this one. The London Hammer.
Somehow I had a feeling that this was going to be
the Hammer. Reminds me a lot of the Koso artifact. How the Koso artifact was a spark plug, like, left with all this rock and stone surrounding it.
Mm-hmm.
London Hammer is about the same thing. In June 1936, Max Hahn and his wife Emma were hiking along the Red Creek near London, Texas. It was there that they discovered an artifact which seemed completely out of place. They found a unique piece of wood protruding from a rock concretion. When they had their son come and break the rock around this handle sticking out. And when he broke the rock, it revealed that there was an iron hammer with a wooden handle buried in the rock. Okay, do you understand that?
Yeah, the rock is encasing.
Yes.
All you could see was the wooden handle sticking out.
Yes. In 1983, Carl Ball, a creationist, purchased the artifact and promoted it as a monumental pre-flood discovery. The rock encompassing the hammer was dated to between 400 and 500 million years old. Right, right, right now.
Yeah.
So there's this hammer. I guess it's like a roofing hammer, a large roofing hammer. You know, it's not a sledgehammer,
mm-hmm.
not a little tiny hammer for hanging a picture on the wall. This is like a large roofing hammer. And it's got an iron head on it. It's got a handle. And this thing is encapsulated in this stone.
I'm going to touch on a few things that I've read when I was first reading about that artifact.
Sure.
Number one was the fact that the iron in the hammerhead is almost 99% pure, which is more pure than any iron that we have today. So they don't know how they made that. Also, too, in the handle itself, part of the handle was turning into coal whenever they broke it out of that stone.
Really?
That was part of the wood that was in it was turning into coal. Now, they were people that were trying to scoff and poo-poo this whole
thing. Well, exactly. All these artifacts I mentioned this piece that are coming out of the woodwork trying to explain to it. You know, you throw a hammer, and it's in a certain type of mud and clay.
That's exactly
right. It can bake in 10 years, but come on, man.
Well, what they were saying was because of the iron, that it would attract certain minerals that would cause it to encase itself on the flowing water from that river. Now, I don't know. No geologist here. I don't have any idea. But I do know that if it is true that that handle was turning to coal, nothing causes wood to turn to coal except time.
Right.
It doesn't matter. I don't give a damn what you float it in, what you roll it in. Certain minerals aren't going to leach into it from a river and turn the handle into coal.
Well, right. Okay, so there's a large portion of people on this earth that think that human beings have only been here for 6,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you explain a hammer that's encased in stone that's 400 to 500 million years old?
That's the date alone is the thing that blows me away. It's the dating alone. It's the one thing to say that it's like the antiquarian device. It's one thing to say that, you know, hey, that was, you know, the turning of the years. We're not really sure.
Well, the coast are 500,000 years
ago.
When you say 400 and 500
million. 500,000 years ago was ridiculously long ago, but you're right. When you start saying 400 or 500 million years, that is, I can't fathom that. I really can't. I cannot.
The heck? Oh, your computer.
What the heck was that? I really can't wrap my head around it.
No.
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, it's.
That's why I like these things.
I'm so fascinated.
Yeah.
I'm so fascinated by it. You're 99% pure iron and coal in the handle. If that's all true. Now, you know, just down here south of us, down around Granbury, whenever you start talking about where they have the tracks.
Oh, in Glenrose.
Yeah. I've actually heard that there were tracks found down there with human footprints in them.
Right.
Now,
dinosaur tracks with a human footprint in the track.
Yes. I've never been down there to see it.
Oh, really?
I haven't seen that.
I've been down there and
seen
tracks.
I've seen dinosaur tracks.
Yes.
I've been down there several times. But I've never seen the alleged human in the dinosaur tracks.
You know what's also neat about Glenrose, other than the dinosaur footprints and all the stuff down there?
Is it close to Granbury and there's a Babe's Chicken in Granbury?
Well, of course. But their county courthouse down there used to have on display the bones of a giant.
A female giant.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't think it's there anymore.
It's not there.
And unfortunately, I wasn't aware of giants till 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's gonna be something. We need to get a hold of too. We need to interview Josh Reeves.
Yeah, man, about the rock wall.
Yeah, I mean, you've worked all around there, and we've all been over there for wrestling meets and everything else. So that would really be a good interview.
Well, and there's been other people that have hit me up about different interviews. I mean, Brian again. He was talking about the Black Eyed Kids
with David Weatherly.
Yeah, I mean, I've sent him a couple emails. I haven't heard nothing back. You know, some people are really quick to do an interview with us, and then some people are harder to get
busy.
They're very busy,
especially right here towards the end of the year.
So, I mean, what I'm trying to say is I don't want people to think that we're ignoring certain subjects. You know, when there's certain things, I don't really know a whole lot about it. I'd rather talk to a specialist.
Yes, yes.
You know, like when we had Linda on.
Yes.
Okay, I don't really know anything about dog men. You know, it's not my area of expertise.
You don't know anything? Really? You don't know? I mean, come on now. We don't know anything about that. Neither one of us know anything about that.
Right.
That was a really wild one, yeah.
Everybody, thank you again for listening to us.
Yeah, thank you so much. We hope you enjoyed this episode. This is just me and Kyle kind of hanging out, being ourselves.
Yeah, we didn't have any interviews this week, so we just put together some stories that we thought would be entertaining.
Stuff that we enjoyed. Thanks to all the veterans that are listening and all the ones that
absolutely
will serve.
Thank you for your service. Yes.
Thanks, you know, thanks so much for making this fun. We have really enjoyed doing it. We're going to be here doing it from now on.
Yes, thank you for those that have written new reviews on Apple for us.
Yes.
I don't have it in front of me. We'll get it out of the next show. please follow the website, www.expandedperspectives.com. Mm-hmm. Follow us on Facebook, on Twitter. You can find us almost everywhere, you would think.
Yeah,
with social media.
We're around.
Yeah. Email the show.
Yeah, email us.
expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. We mean Kim, we love to hear from you.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives Classic Rewind. I hope you enjoyed that episode. That was pretty cool. I like the stories of these rock apes living in the jungles of Vietnam, you know, while these soldiers were fighting. It's a pretty cool story. I've heard other stories from the Vietnam War. One was of like a green dragon lady flying through the skies at night. Also kind of reminds me of the Indava bird, like with, when we were talking with Paul Nation. Strange sightings deep within Southeast Asia. Very cool. It seems like there's a lot of stories associated with wars, whether it's the Vietnam War, the World War II, World War I. Might have to do a special episode on stuff like that. All right, that's just about all the time we have for this episode. I want to thank everybody for listening to Expanded Perspectives, for following us and helping us out. We really couldn't do the show without you guys and you wonderful people. If you want to help us out, even more, don't forget about Expanded Perspectives Elite. You have to go over to the website, expandedperspectives.com, scroll down to the Elite tab, click on that, and signing up is pretty easy. It's $5 a month, and with that $5, you'll get extra content every month, some months more than others, and you'll get access to our entire back catalog, almost 240 episodes at this point. And so if you're asking yourself, do you like Expanded Perspectives? And the answer is yes, then you're going to like Expanded Perspectives Elite. They're about an hour long, just like the normal show. No ads or anything like that and stuff like that because it's not re-aired on any radio networks. And you'll be helping me and Cam out. That money really is used for research materials. You know, we have to constantly buy books and things like that to keep digging up these stories. So it really does help. Like we always say, we couldn't do the show without you. If you have any stories you want to share with me and Cam and the listeners, you can email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show, 888-393-2783. That's 888-393-BRUD. And don't forget to write and rate us on iTunes or any other podcatcher. And don't forget about going over to YouTube and subscribing over there. We're trying to build a big audience over there too. I hope everybody out there has a good weekend. Stay safe. Till next time, I'm Kyle. Peace.